But from the Magi to the words of John by the Jordan River, to water turned into wine, to radical words from Jesus about the blessedness of the poor and meek, and dangerous words about loving one's enemies, we arrive at the mountaintop. This season of epiphany, this season of encounters where the people of God furrow their brows and wonder if they've really seen and heard what they've just seen and heard, comes to culmination on this mountaintop. And just as the stories of these past weeks have confronted and challenged our expectations of what's possible, what miracles really happen in the world, should we really love our enemies, this shining space on the mountaintop leaves us enveloped in ambiguity. Joining Jesus in this moment are two figures who have their own mountain stories in our scriptures. Moses, we heard today, goes up on the mountain to be encountered by God, to receive the revelation of God, the word of the people's new life together. On this mountaintop, Moses asks to see God's face, to see God right in front of him. But God says no, and allows only a partial vision. Elijah, too, finds himself on a mountain, hiding from the royal authorities who have had enough of his telling them what they ought and ought not do. God appears, not in the deafening wind, not in the shaking of the earth, not in the great fire that follows, but amid the sound of sheer silence. What are you doing here, Elijah? It is good for us to be here. I've heard of this place where God speaks through bushes that don't burn up, where you can catch a glimpse of God, where the voice of God can be heard. It is good for us to be here. Who can blame Peter? It does seem like a pretty great place to be. Here, after all, is a place with great clarity, an opportunity to see deeply into the well. The medieval German mystic Meister Eckhart used to say that he longed for a chance to see God in God's dressing room, free from Eckhart's concepts of God and thoughts about God. He longed to see God straight away in that moment when one thought faded away, but before God could be clothed and hidden in his next thought. And what person of faith can't relate to that longing for clarity, for that removal of ambiguity, to see the deepest truths clearly, to know the ground of reality fully? It would be the safest of all places, where no grief or depression, no danger or death would be. There is no hunger on that mountaintop, for the people of God eat rich marrow and drink well-aged wines. A heavenly banquet is to be found on that mountaintop. Let us go to that mountaintop, and if we find there for ourselves a place of peace and understanding and abundance and safety and the very presence of God, then let us stay there. Let us build 3 booths and just stay right there. Isn't that the whole point of this journey, after all? Isn't that what this faith is all about? No, Moses, you can't see what you want to see. But having seen what you have seen, go back down the mountain. Go back to my people and lead them through the wilderness, and I will be with you. No, Elijah, you can't stay here on the mountain and hide. But having seen what you have seen, go back down the mountain and appoint new royalty to lead justly, and I will be with you. Yes, Peter, this is a good place to be. but it is not a good place to stay. This scene in Luke is importantly framed in the story. Just before this is Jesus' feeding of the many and his word to his followers, take up your cross daily. And from this mountaintop, after this scene, Jesus and the disciples go back down into the wilderness of the towns and the villages among the people, and they see Jesus touch a child in need of healing. And they hear once again Jesus tell them what will happen once they get to Jerusalem. The mountaintop in Luke's story of Jesus, just as in the stories of Moses and Elijah, is not the end point. It is not the goal. It is a place to see and to hear, yes, but it is not a place to stay. It is a place to be sent from. To see the face of God is to see the faces of the people at the foot of the mountain, the people with whom we, Christ followers, belong in solidarity. This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him and see the face of God in the face of the child that needs that healing touch, in the face of the child who needs that loving word amid a world of uncertainty. See the face of God in the faces of those who are too often ignored in our communities. See the face of God in the face of the loved ones with whom we make our lives. This is my child, the beloved. Listen to him and hear the voice of God crying out among the dispossessed and distressed, among those who are losing homes and habitat, among those who are vainly seeking security and power and wealth. I don't know if the Meister ever got to see what he wanted to see. But if whatever he saw did not send him from his mountaintop into the wilderness, then it was just another apparition. Because in the one who comes among us, in the one who shows us who God is, we see not only a mountaintop God waiting to be beheld in all the divine glory, but an in the wilderness God, and among the people, God, one who is among the hurts. And this isn't a glimpse or a partial vision. It is who God is, and it is who we are. As the people of God gathered into and through the baptismal waters, we may not be given all the certainties that we want or the clear vision that we sometimes seek after, but we are given this eternal promise. You are a child of God, and with you God is well pleased. And it is from this holy ground, from this mountaintop space, that we are freed to go into the world, to see God in our neighbor, and to hear the voice of God in our world. It is good to be here. And we must return to our mountaintops. It is good and necessary to touch again the baptismal waters, to be fed again at the feast of the table. We must come back to our mountaintops. But we come back to the mountaintop that we might be sent back into the wilderness world, taking up our cross daily for the sake of others, for the sake of our neighbors, and for the sake of ourselves. Amen.